You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the herb. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, August 10th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to all of you who are listening to us on the podcast, but this is one of those days where you wish you were watching live on YouTube, 3 p.m. Pacific time, live.mjagenda.com, because today we went picking some flowers. Oh, yeah, we got some flowers, and it's kind of interesting on the green screen because they kind of fade out on you, but big old set of cannabis flowers here from our Delta 9 house and studios. Maybe I can turn off the background, and that might help us be able to see it. There we go. Get the black, and then there. Look at them. Boom. Big old cannabis plant coming at you. Ooh, boy. So very excited about that, and we are having a good time here because we have got some amazing guest interview to talk to you about today. There we go. Turn off the chroma key. Now you can see the plant. There we go. That's some cannabis leaf. We're looking good. So on today's show, right after the cannabis headline news, we're going to get to a very important and special interview with Major Neil Franklin from Law Enforcement Action Partnership, the Police for Reform segment. You may know Major Franklin was a almost 30-year veteran of the Maryland State Police Department and of the Baltimore Police Department, where he was partially in charge of taking care of their training there in Baltimore. And of course, you know that we've had some stories coming out of Baltimore recently where the cops there have been caught not once but twice on body cam, supposedly planting evidence, planting drug evidence. So we talked to Major Franklin about that and asked him also, what do we do about these bad cops? We keep talking about these bad apples. Once we find one of the bad apples, how do we keep that bad apple from getting back in the barrel? So that's coming up in our Police for Reform segment. Stay tuned for that. Then in the Radical Rant, I'm going to go off on Donald Trump, who has now decided he wants to call the opiate crisis a national emergency. And while that might sound like a good idea, given who his attorney general is and what he wants to do with Drug War 2.0, this could be the spark that lights Drug War 2.0. We'll get to that in the show, but first, let's go to the news.
This is your cannabis headline news, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Thursday, August 10th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Utah Patients Coalition has received approval from Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox to begin gathering signatures to qualify for the November 2018 ballot. After holding 10 public hearings across the state and meeting with various state departments and stakeholders, Utah Patients Coalition will now proceed to collect the more than 113,000 required signatures to place doctor-approved access to medical cannabis on the ballot for Utah voters to approve. In response to feedback from state officials, Utah Patients Coalition made two technical changes to the initiative language, one striking a short tax deduction provision that would have required federal tax law to be interpreted and implemented by state tax authorities, an issue that advocates plan to revisit with the State Tax Commission and the legislature after the initiative becomes law, and number two, establishing a limit on the amount of medical cannabis that a patient or caregiver can transport, bringing it in line with a common 30-day restriction on pharmacy drugs. According to their website at utahpatients.org, quote, the initiative does not allow patients to grow their own cannabis and it does not allow patients to smoke medical cannabis, end quote. Shauna Banda, the Kansas mother who was busted for her medical cannabis use when school officials contacted police after her son corrected misinformation about marijuana in school, has received a plea deal that will spare her prison and allow her to move to a medical marijuana state. Banda was given a 12-month sentence of write-in probation where she doesn't have to physically report to her probation officer. Banda is now moving to the Spokane area of Washington State where she can legally use the cannabis oil she uses to keep her severe Crohn's disease in check. In the 2 years since her arrest, Banda has had to forego her medicine, leading to 20 surgeries and removal of some of her organs. Banda was facing up to 17 years in prison for charges of endangering a child, distribution or possession with intent to distribute a controlled substance within 1,000 feet of school property, unlawful manufacture of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Regulators in Nevada have surprised cannabis observers by eliminating home delivery service for marijuana for adult use in a set of draft regulations for the industry released last month. The regulations, which would take effect January 1st if kept in current form, would end delivery service currently being provided by about 20 dispensaries in Nevada, most in Las Vegas. A spokeswoman for the Department of Taxation said the ban on recreational marijuana deliveries is to, quote, protect public health and safety, end quote. Deliveries of medical marijuana would not be affected. The spokeswoman explained that recreational deliveries were targeted because there is no mechanism in place to register adult users of cannabis, like there is contained within the medical marijuana registry system. She said the draft regulations may be changed to create a system whereby recreational consumers register with their choice of dispensary to qualify for home delivery, which she believes lowers the threat of robberies of delivery drivers. The total solar eclipse that crosses the entire continental United States on this August 21st will stop tax collections on marijuana in Oregon. The state capital of Salem is one of the major cities in the United States that lies within the so-called path of totality, the areas of the country that will experience about 2 minutes of the moon completely obscuring the sun during the eclipse. Marijuana Moment's Tom Angel uncovered a bulletin from the Marijuana Tax Administration in the Oregon Department of Revenue that states in part, quote, with the city of Salem expecting an unusually high number of visitors that day, DOR has determined that we will not be scheduling any payment appointments on August 21st, 2017, end quote. Since marijuana is still federally illegal, many Oregon cannabis businesses rely on the ability to walk into the tax administration to pay their taxes in cash. Officials in Massachusetts are unveiling a new advertising campaign aimed at highlighting the dangers of driving while high on marijuana. The campaign, entitled Drive High, the Crash is on You, will target younger people through a series of billboard, radio, and TV ads. The campaign directly rips off similar campaigns in Colorado and Washington, including a TV ad showing a man failing to light an outdoor grill that has no propane fuel attached, arguing that, quote, grilling while high may be legal, but driving to get more propane while high is not, end quote. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Thursday, August 10th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
You're not high. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We've turned the corner on drug addiction in the United States. Drug addiction in the United States is under control.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
This is Police for Reform, brought to you by Law Enforcement Action Partnership at LEAP.cc. LEAP is a group of law enforcement professionals advocating for criminal justice reforms in the areas of drug prohibition, mass incarceration, asset forfeiture, community policing, and more. LEAP provides qualified speakers across the world to speak with authority on criminal justice issues. We visit with one such speaker now in Police for Reform.
Welcome to another edition of Police for Reform, the podcast for Law Enforcement Action Partnership. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today, we have the executive director of LEAP. It's Major Neil Franklin joining us. Welcome back, Neil.
Russ, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
I couldn't have thought of a more perfect person to get on the show to address the most recent scandal that's taking place out of Baltimore, where the police department was caught not once but twice on body cams in what appears to be incidences of, at best, recreating evidence collecting of drugs, and at worst, planting evidence of drugs. And you worked in the Baltimore Police Department for a long time in education and training. So what is going on in Baltimore, Neil? What can we tell our listeners about this scandal?
Well, first, let me say that nowhere in our training or in our policies, and you're right, I was the head of training from 2000 to 2004 in the Baltimore Police Department. Not only in our training specific to the Baltimore Police Department, but in the Maryland Police Correctional Training Commission, which is the regulatory body for all training of police officers in the state of Maryland, there's nothing in their 700-plus objectives that has anything to do that instructs anyone on recreating the collection of evidence. It just doesn't exist, and it doesn't make sense. Which therefore leaves this these two episodes very, very questionable. I think that they speak for themselves. This isn't the movies. You don't recreate evidence collection because the importance of that, and these police officers know what the importance of evidence collection is, that it has to be articulated accurately. You have to speak to it truthfully, and you can't recreate something point for point for point for point. You're always going to miss something, omit something, or add something that could be extremely problematic when it comes to testifying in court. So it makes no sense. We don't teach it. We wouldn't dare teach it or instruct it or build any type of program around recreating the collection of any evidence.
And what's concerning about this is after we saw what happened in Ferguson, we saw numerous cell phone cam incidences of police behaving badly, let's say. There was a lot of call for, hey, we need to have these body cams. We got to have body cams on the police so we can make sure that the interactions are being accurately recorded. But right. We in these situations, we got cops that are turning the cams off, turning them on, using them to fabricate evidence. What can we do with body cams or body cams not the solution? What do we do about this?
Well, it goes to show that there's, along with the good that comes from body cams, comes the bad. And, you know, despite these two occurrences, and I'm sure that there are probably more throughout the country, you know, the benefit of having body cams, so let's get that out right now. The benefit of having body cams greatly outweighs this type of activity by our police officers. You know, so what do we have to do? We go back to the drawing board. We look at policy. You know, we look at oversight. We look at accountability. And we start recreating policy. We start rewriting policy to fix these holes that we're seeing. As technology improves, I think we'll be able to solve some of that. As battery life improves, I think we'll be able to have these things running 24/7 in the background. And along with that, policy will change to deal with that. But we always have to be searching for solutions to problems like this. So I hope that no one's thinking that, well, let's get rid of the body cams because here we have problems. No, as I said before, the benefits greatly outweigh situations such as this. I mean, number one, we know that when people are wearing body cams, we know that when people are using their cell phones to record, you know what? People on both sides behave better. The cops behave better and the citizens behave better. And then when things don't go as best as they possibly can, for the most part, we're collecting good evidence that can be used, that can be very useful in determining someone's guilt or innocence. And also in determining whether or not a police officer is using excessive force, whether they're being brutal, and in some cases that unfortunately result in the deaths of our citizens.
So with respect to these body cams having an off button, is this a technological limitation? You mentioned something about battery life and such, or are there political considerations, say police unions that don't want every minute of the day filmed or something?
Well, it's all the above. There is a technical aspect to it, limited battery life, but also from the political perspective, and also dealing with the privacy issues as well. I mean, many times police officers have to go into the homes of people, and the calls vary. And, you know, you need to be able to deactivate the recording. If you're in the home of a citizen, it could be a sexual assault case. It can be something involving some sensitive family matters and so on. So there should be some type of process for that. But all you need is accountability. All you need is the proper policy and accountability to deal with those situations. And then for the most part, they will record most of the time that they're being warned. The other political part regarding the union, yes, I mean, if I'm a cop, I got to relieve myself. There are things that I need to do that I really don't want recorded that are personal in nature also. I'm sure you don't want, I know I don't want to see it. I'm sure your listeners don't either.
Now, you mentioned accountability as well, and one of the things that gets frustrating for observers of these issues of police malfeasance, speaking of the Baltimore cops, they're on paid administrative leave, and the Washington Post recently came out with an investigative report showing how cops are fired and rehired many times by the same department because the police union appeals the firing, and there's some technicality that got missed. I mean, I think some people are worried that, you know, there's no way of tracking bad cops. There's if a bad cop's rooted out of one department, he goes and moves to some other county or some other state and gets another job. What do you think about that issue of accountability and holding these bad cops to account?
Yeah, so there are a couple key points here. Number one, in many of our states, not most, there's things such as the Police Officer's Bill of Rights. These are rights that have been afforded to law enforcement officers throughout the years because of improprieties at the managerial level. You know, if you don't like a particular person as a sergeant or a lieutenant or a commander, you know what? You put things in place. You get the wheels moving to get rid of them. A lot of that was also along the lines of race, where African-American police officers were being booted out of police departments with no protection. So here we now have Police Officers' Bill of Rights. And we also have union contracts in many of our police departments that even go well beyond the Police Officer's Bill of Rights and the protections afforded there. And so when you have these very strong negotiated contracts, it's not only very difficult to get rid of the police officers, but there are also many windows, you know, for bringing them back if you don't cross your T's and dot your I's in the investigations and so on. You know, the other part of this on a national level that you mentioned, when police officers are terminated and they pop up somewhere else, either within state or out of state, there's a solution. There's a solution, Rush, for this. And, you know, right now, the police officers are insured by the cities and towns and states that they work for. Blanket policies cover their behavior, their negligence, and when the civil suits are filed, it's usually the department and the jurisdiction that has to foot the bill, the taxpayers. How about we have insurance? Each police officer carries their own malpractice insurance, just like doctors do, similar to that. So now the police departments can pay the basic premiums, but any rise in premiums because of, you know, like you have an accident with your car, what happens to your policy? Your premium goes up, right? So rises will be borne by the police officer. And you know what? If you have too many lawsuits, or maybe one is even enough if it's severe enough, then that insurance company drops you. Now, if you can't get insurance as a police officer anywhere in the country because of your record, because of your, you know, your brutality and your excessive force complaints, then you know what? You can't be a police officer because you can't get insured. This is the kind of thinking that we need. I'm not saying that this would work, but have we ever looked at it? I don't think so. I haven't seen anyone try it. We just need to start thinking out of the box. We need to have databases that track police officers who have been terminated from police departments so that when you do fill out an application for another police department across the country, pops up. There's a red flag. Well, let's do an investigation. We see that you have problems in this department. You were terminated from that, so we got to dig. It's all it takes. It doesn't take a lot, but we just haven't gotten to that point yet. We have, you know, the Fraternal Order of Police, and we have other police unions across the country that make it difficult for us to move in this type of direction. Just common sense.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is something I'm really happy to hear about and glad that Law Enforcement Action Partnership is bringing this to the fore. Let's give some information to our listeners out there if they want to get involved with this reforming of our police and leading this popular charge by the people to try to come up with some sort of accountability. Can you give them some resources they could use?
Absolutely. Well, the first one they can go to is our website. It's lawenforcementaction.org. Go to lawenforcementaction.org, and you'll see the different silos that we have there. And a lot of what we're talking about here on this show, Russ, is dealing with our first silo, police-community relations. Obviously, when we have problems like this, it is a great detriment to building positive relationships between police and community, which then lead to other things and other problems in society. So we have to solve for these things so that we can improve those relationships between police and community, deal with some of the disparity issues that we have across the country. And at the end of the day, the goal is, and let me just make something perfectly clear. LEAP, the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, we are pro-police. We are pro-citizens. We are pro the profession. We want things to be professional. We want strong relationships between police and community. We want the community and the police to be one, not something that you have to build a bridge between. They should be one. And that's the reason we do this work, among others. But that's one of the main reasons we do this work. We want the police to be held accountable. We believe we are cops. Russ, we are cops, yeah. We are judges, we are prosecutors, and we want our profession to be just that, extremely professional and one with the community. And you know what? We have to identify not just the systemic problems that we're dealing with, such as the war on drugs, all right, but we also have to identify and remove those problem police officers, problem commanders. And you know what? From time to time, you might have to redo a whole police department if it's that corrupt.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Major Neil Franklin is the executive director of Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Check him out at lawenforcementaction.com and get more information today. Neil, thanks for joining us again. And I hope the news that we get out of Baltimore next time is much brighter.
Thanks a lot, Russ. And thanks for having me on board. Things will improve in Baltimore. Just keep an eye on us.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. If you're a cannabis brand looking to build trust and awareness within the community, consider becoming a sponsor of this program. Your message will be seen and heard by the most dedicated followers of marijuana policy reform, who are loyal and supportive of those brands that give back to the community. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button to learn how your brand can also be featured in my live nationwide appearances. Thank you for your support.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose, deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association and the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Today in the rant, we get to update the rants from a couple of days ago where Donald Trump was speaking about the opiate crisis, and he used a phrase that it was a problem the likes of which the world had never seen before. And then at the same event, when asked about North Korea, went on to say that if they didn't stop threatening the United States, they would see a fire and fury, the likes of which the world had never seen before. So he's got this little phrase in his head, the likes of which the world has never seen, and he just keeps repeating it over and over. And one of the major situations with this opiate crisis has been the commission that has been impaneled with Governor Chris Christie and Patrick Kennedy and Bertha Madras and a whole bunch of anti-marijuana people. This opiate commission had been given over 8,000 comments from citizens like you and me, asking them to look into the science. Many studies now that have repeated this finding that medical marijuana access is a harm reduction option for this opiate crisis. It leads to fewer overdoses, less use, fewer people checking into rehab, fewer deaths, et cetera, et cetera. And all those comments have been completely ignored by this opiate commission. So Trump is speaking about this opiate commission, and one of the recommendations they made, which was that there be an emergency declared, that there be a national emergency declared. Now, this isn't just a rhetorical thing, but it also sets into motion some new powers, like the Congress and the Department of Justice. Their hands are untied a little bit when it comes to appropriating money and putting forth emergency regulations and such. When you declare an official emergency, state of emergency, hard-hit areas like Appalachia, other places that are dealing with the opiate crisis, could get federal funds and grants to pay for naloxone or to be able to pay for more rehab. It would allow Medicaid to be able to pay for more rehab. And there's all sorts of reasons why the declaration of an emergency can be important in this situation. But what's troubling about this is that letting loose this federal government with emergency powers to tackle the opiate crisis, to me, runs the severe risk of mission creep, of it becoming drug war 2.0. Are we really sure about giving Jeff Sessions, Department of Justice, carte blanche to run around and instigate their new sort of drug war policies? Because remember, we're talking about people here who laugh and mock the idea that medical cannabis can help the opiate crisis. We've heard Jeff Sessions say, I'm astonished that people would think that give me a break, right? He can't even countenance the idea. And obviously, Chris Christie and the anti-pot people on the commission can't countenance the idea as well. Christie the other day was quoted as saying something along the lines of, well, why don't we just go legalize heroin? We could tax that and make a whole bunch of money off of legalizing heroin. So not a whole lot of progressive thinking going on there. And it led me to think about the remarks that Trump made in the first round when he was being asked about this opiate emergency, and how familiar it sounded. Because all Trump could go around and talk about when it came to this opiate crisis was that people ought to just say no. It was a repeat of Nancy Reagan, and it's so close a repeat that I made a mashup of the two, just so you can tell how they just weave right into each other in their policy.
The best way to prevent drug addiction and overdose is to prevent people from abusing drugs in the first place.
Drugs take away the dream from every child's heart and replace it with a nightmare.
If they don't start, they won't have a problem.
There's no moral middle ground. Indifference is not an option. We want you to help us create an outspoken intolerance for drug use.
If they do start, it's awfully tough to get off.
For the sake of our children, I implore each of you, to be unyielding and inflexible in your opposition to drugs.
So we can keep them from going on, and maybe by talking to youth and telling them no good, really bad for you.
We can help by using every opportunity to force the issue of not using drugs to the point of making others uncomfortable.
In every way, but if they don't start, it will never be a problem.
Say yes to your life, and when it comes to drugs and alcohol, just say no.
I mean, really, it's 31 years difference. That's Donald Trump from 2017, Nancy Reagan from 1986. They could have been just sitting together in the same room delivering those remarks. Have we learned nothing from the failures of the 1980s? Have we learned nothing from the fact that telling people to just say no, whether it's sex or drugs, is not a valid policy? People are going to say yes. And we need to have policies that understand that, that recognize people take drugs, all sorts of drugs, always have, always will. And generally, the number of people taking drugs, the amount, the rate of drug use remains fairly steady. The number of people that have dependence issues with it remains fairly steady. It's a fact of human life. It's a fact of human nature. And to continue to deny that and to try to wish it away and think we can, by fiat, just ban it, just say no, and everything will go away, is infantile and naive thinking. We need real leadership on this issue that understands the nuances of dependence and addiction and pharmacokinetics and policy. Not drug warriors, not tough on crime people who can only see drug use through the lens of morality, through judgmental eyes that believe it's just a sin, it's just a crime, and it must be eliminated. Folks, no victim, no crime. If it's something you're doing to yourself, it's not a crime. You've given yourself permission to do this to yourself. Nobody's rights have been impacted. If we don't have the right to do to our brains and our bodies what we choose, even if doing those things is bad for us, then we're not truly free. But you can't get that through to someone like Donald Trump. Here's what Trump had to say today in finally deciding. Now, remember, the Opiate Commission said we need to declare an emergency. Tom Price, Health and Human Services Secretary, and Trump that day, a couple days ago, didn't declare an emergency and indicated they probably wouldn't declare an emergency. But apparently, I don't know, maybe somebody on Fox and Friends said something, because now Donald Trump seems to be all about declaring an emergency.
The opioid crisis is an emergency, and I'm saying officially right now it is an emergency. It's a national emergency. We're going to spend a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of money on the opioid crisis.
But you need emergency powers to address it.
We're going to draw it up, and we're going to make it a national emergency. It is a serious problem, the likes of which we have never had. You know, when I was growing up, they had the LSD, and they had certain generations of drugs. There's never been anything like what's happened to this country over the last 4 or 5 years. And I have to say this, in all fairness, this is a worldwide problem, not just a United States problem. This is happening worldwide.
So you heard that phrase again, the likes of which the world has never seen. He's got that stuck in his little repeat buffer. But also, the LSD. Back in his day, they had the LSD. And the world has never seen a drug overdose problem like this. Right, because the world has never before had for-profit pharmaceutical corporations that were given the long leash by the Drug Enforcement Administration to manufacture far more synthetic opiates than people needed, and gave the green light to doctors and looked the other way as they were bribing doctors to overprescribe these things, to prescribe them off-label, to allow people to go pill mill doctor shopping. Yeah, the world's never seen anything like this before, because nobody had ever combined the forces of greed, evil, and profit in pharmaceutical companies before. Nobody ever combined addiction for profit in such an efficient way before. That's why we're suffering from this crisis. And Lord knows, if Trump and Sessions are the ones declaring an emergency to get us out of it, you can bet there's going to be more of it. That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Log on to MJAgenda.com. Help support the show today. We appreciate all the new patrons who are signing on. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.